Yeah, like two of her top five songs on YouTube Music are written by the main songwriter from Fun, who had essentially a one-hit wonder, who sang that "Tonight We Are Young." Remember that song? It was like the quintessential 2010 song.
I do. I have some sad memories about that song. I try to forget anything that made me happy in the past. Oh, sorry. Yeah, let's have a look. Blah, blah, blah. All right, I'm going to have a look at her release songs. I mean, there's so many.
She has co-songwriting credits, but like Blank Space and Shake It Off, she wrote with like this Swedish songwriting team that wrote Baby One More Time and like a whole bunch of shit for Justin Timberlake and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So like...
So Justin Timberlake's not getting the hate that she gets.
No, I'm not sending hate her way. What I'm interested in, right, she's a pop singer, right? But there is a level of like mania for this Eras tour that is fascinating to me, because having conversation, being a insane Beatles fan, like I would have conversations with other mates who are like big music people. And, you know, you would get drunk and you would have conversations like, we'll never see Beatles, we'll never see Beatlemania ever again. Never see anything like Beatlemania ever again because tastes are so fractured and people can get their art wherever they want, whenever they want. There won't be like an omnipresent global sensation like that ever again. And it's happening right now.
I feel like
it's happening right now. We're at the weekend we're recording, Taylor Swift is playing three shows in Melbourne at the MCG, which no one ever gets to do, really. The people who've played there are Madonna, Michael Jackson, George Michael, Paul McCartney, U2. They're the only people, and Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
So, like, we're talking big people. Ed Sheeran played it once, U2 played it once, Paul McCartney played it once.
He did Marvel. He didn't even do MCG.
Who?
Paul McCartney.
Yeah, when we were here, I'm talking about the 1993 tour. He played at MCG. Anyway, don't try and school me on Paul McCartney trivia.
I think that the show...
It's just amazing, right? It's amazing.
Like, it must be a well thought out, constructed, costumed, like, what a show. You know what I mean?
It's not for me. But I saw Instagram posts from a couple of your friends. Mm. I suppose they're my friends now as well. And they just looked like they were having the best time. And I can't... I know I've matured somewhat where I was like, well, they're having a good time.
And you know what else I love?
25-year-old Damien would have fucking hated them, hated the show, hated the fact that it existed. Fuck Taylor Swift,
I
you know?
I am a fan. I'm a fan of anything.
I'm more excited about the new Idols album that's dropped today.
I am a fan of anything that is bringing together people who you wouldn't normally see together for moments like this. So I saw an Instagram filled with fathers taking their daughters to a concert, and the dads were dressed up with the daughters.
Lame. That's lame.
Where the fuck do you see that? Like, for so long.
That's great. Anytime parents spend time with their kids, it's an upgrade from.
But it's
what
not
we
just
got,
that. Right? It's not spend time with your kids. It's would your dad have ever taken you to a concert and gotten dressed up?
No.
Right?
No.
And this is the thing. No, mums have always been not. Mums have always been like in charge of this stuff, right? But this is a moment where I can see, and it's shit to even think it and say it, but it's really nice to see fucking fathers getting involved with their kids/daughters lives and being a part of something. My brother, who is a stay-at-home dad, not by choice, he has said like he takes care of, like, he drops the kids off at school, does everything, does the parties, all that sort of stuff. And, like, he has said to me on the weekends when he goes to the parties and he takes the kids, he's like, it's still the fucking mothers taking the kids to birthday parties. And he's like, where are the dads? You know what I mean? He's like, he goes, there's some dads I've never met. Some dads I've met once. He's like, where are they? And the mum's like, oh, you know, they're watching the footy, watching the game. Awesome. They're out with the boys.
Awesome little lady. Let me just explain some facts of life to you, okay? I'm the one who brings the fucking money in, all right?
Not really.
So when I get to the weekend, all right, all I want is just a couple of fucking hours to be able to sit down on the couch that I paid for.
In and watch, silence.
And watch the fucking blue baggers completely miserable on my own in silence, okay?
Yeah, that's why I had a family.
I want no one here so people don't get to see me scream at the television like a psycho.
But Matt was like, he's like, and he asked me this question. Matt was like, don't dads want to spend time with their kids?
No.
He goes, when I
the
was
answer
working.
Answer is no.
Matt goes, when I was working full time, so long story short, my brother had a pretty severe work accident and he's unable to work now. But he goes, when I was working full time, his weekends were filled with children's birthday parties and doing stuff with his kids because he fucking missed them during the week. And he's like, yeah, I want to do stuff. Like, let's go, you know, we'll go play golf. We'll go do this. We'll go to time zone. Like, he fucking loved it. And he's like, I don't understand these dads. And it was just really nice seeing a bunch of dads. And sure, some of them may only show up one time a year. But I hope that this is I really hope that the Taylor Swift kind of energy is of things to come, that guys are more, because, you know, it was always like, oh, you don't spend time with your daughter, it's gay. Like, I saw masculine men wearing pink sunglasses and like necklaces and like just dressing up for it with their kids and stuff. And I thought that was really sweet. You know what I mean? It's fucking sweet. It's just nice.
Yeah.
Be involved. You know what I mean? If my niece Charlotte was going to a concert with her mum and dad, like, she loves AC/DC. If she went to AC/DC with her parents, she would be dressed up like AC/DC. Like,
yeah, Charlotte also sounds like Dave Hughes. So it's not.
I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, yeah. If I can put some Akadakar on, man.
It's just, you know, I just thought it was really nice.
I think, like,
a crossover was sweet to see.
Yeah. And also, like, yeah, like, my first instinct is to be a complete snob about it because I've been a music Nazi my whole life. But yeah, the benefits far outweigh the costs. And, like, you know, this is how kids get into music as well. And I think that's important. Like, 300,000 Melburnians have gone to a fucking gig this weekend.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the biggest gig on earth, but at least it's a live music gig.
Dude.
And hopefully that, like, you know, maybe that parlays into people going, like, because I'm seeing responses of, like, oh, my God, I'm having such a good time at this music show. Like, well, you know, they fucking happen all the time, man. Like, Melbourne is the music capital of the country. You could go watch some, I don't know, Australian artists and see what you think of them.
And across the road at probably, like, Rod Laver, I think it was Rod Laver, was Max Schwox 20.
Oh, Rob Thomas, tough weekend to
I
be in
wanna
town.
I
want to
push you around. Yeah, but
you know
Max Schwox 20 would have been packed.
I don't think we spoke about this. Or maybe we did speak about it briefly on the Barbie episode. I really want to give the guys in Matchbox 20 props for releasing that song for the film.
Yeah.
They write their own stuff, Matchbox 20, so they would have had to have had some say whether that went in the film or not.
It's sweet.
Like, for them to have enough self-awareness of, like, oh, yeah, this song could absolutely be construed as like an incel anthem is good work on their part, and a tough weekend to come into Melbourne, literally across the road from Taylor Swift.
Tell you one thing about Taylor Swift though, I'm
it's literally
at
a footbridge from the MCG to the tennis center.
Could you imagine
here,
trying to get out of there? Oh God, awful.
It'd be pretty easy to get out of the tennis center, I reckon.
Yeah, but the MCG at the same time, you're like, I don't know. I just want to say I'm looking at a list, a plethora of so many songs that Taylor Swift has done. And she, that was
Jesus
a nice burp.
Christ,
oh, that was
dude.
So good. Whether she wrote the song on her own.
Pizza the Hut.
Whether she wrote it on her own or wrote it with one other person or two other people, at least, like, she's got her hand in it, opposed to other people.
I'm just interested. Yeah. I love Robbie Williams. He doesn't fucking write his songs either. Like, he writes with other people. I'm not.
Tell you what, not, interesting.
Tom
to
Jones
see.
Never wrote a song. Elvis Presley never really wrote a song. It doesn't necessarily detract from you as an artist. And obviously, like, she has a huge connection, especially with young women. That's great. That's good. I was just interested to see who. And I thought it was interesting that, like, she's worked with different, like, songwriting
Yeah, she's teams, really eclectic. You know? And it shows, but it shows in her albums because she's always, like,
because someone like Miley Cyrus keeps going back to Mark Ronson.
Yeah.
Like, she'll go away for a bit and then she'll come back and do something with Ronson again. Like,
dude, Miley and Taylor, I really, both of them, I think, you know, I really, if it means that people are going to gigs, you know what I mean? Like what you're saying. I like both. And also Beyonce, between Miley, Beyonce and Taylor Swift, the biggest fucking, you know, musos in the at the moment are women.
Yeah. And like I got into music listening to AM 3KZ is what my mum used to listen to in the kitchen growing up. And so I heard Lionel Richie and Madonna and Michael Jackson and like Cyndi Lauper. I loved Cyndi Lauper. Tina Turner, my mum used to tease me about.
You're just saying the whole fucking cast list of last week's episode.
We are the because they were all on the radio. My mum used to tease me about being in love with Tina Turner. I would get so mad. I'm like, I don't. Mum would be like, Tina Turner's your girlfriend. I'd be like, I don't love Tina Turner. But
she's
I think
black.
I kind of did a little bit.
Hey.
Yeah. Well, hey, young Damien, why are you being so
racist
for?
Nah, your mum's not racist.
No, anyway.
She's not a festuca.
What have you been... I'm afraid to ask this question every week now. What have you been watching?
I've been rewatching Doctor Who. David Tennant. Yeah, okay. It's good.
I thought you were going to say Murder on the Mountain 4.
It's good. It's funny because I remember Celia saying to me, because I think Celia is probably the biggest Doctor Who fan I know, and she got me into it. And she got a massive crush on David Tennant, and she, the first season with him with Martha.
That's the most Celia thing
I know.
For her to
so
be
cute.
To be in love with this like nerdy Scotsman.
I know. But Martha is his companion, and the whole thing about Martha is that she's in love with him.
Paul McCartney's English sheepdog, Martha.
No. People aren't going to understand that reference.
There's a song called Martha, My Dear on the White album, one of the most successful rock albums of all time. And it's Paul writing a song about his dog, Martha.
And we always said, if we get a second dog, we're getting a little girl and we're going to call her Martha.
Well, people don't know about that. That's less well known as the fact that Paul wrote a song for his dog.
Martha, my dear. It's really good. Anyway, so she always said that Martha, she hated that season because it was the only season where the companion was in love with the doctor. And it puts like a weird spin on it, and then
jealous.
It's just the point about Doctor Who is that he's androgynous, and so when you put this like love triangle in, it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit. The Doctor has been going on for decades.
Permission to speak.
It doesn't work. Yes.
Permission to speak as an old Doctor Who fan.
Yes.
There has been like sexual tension in the past, like Tom Baker. And one of his, I can't remember which.
But it's shit. We don't want that. We're not here
just
for it.
Can I finish?
No.
Can I? I'm going to let you finish. I'm going to let you finish. But yeah, Tom Baker, listen to me. Tom Baker had a companion. I can't remember her name, but there was a, like, will they, won't they? And then they ended up, the actors, married in real life. So there was this sort of like sexual, but the fans kind of liked it, but also didn't like it at the same time. It split the fan base.
I just
want to
say Tom Baker was the best of Doctor Who of all time. I'm going to let you finish,
but Tom Baker was the best Doctor Who of all time.
No. So Tennant, anyway, so Seals always said it to me. She was like,
if Kanye got up and said that. Started talking about Doctor Who.
Whatever he's doing to his Australian wife is abuse.
What? Australian wife?
She's Australian.
When did this happen?
That chick he's dating, who
I'm so
never wears
out
clothes,
of the loop.
She was from Melbourne. So people I used to work with at my last job went to school with her. I think she went to Carey. Anyway, so she's naked in every photo. It's like there's one photo where he puts a see-through raincoat on her. And I'm like, no, this you can't just go out naked.
Oh, yeah,
you can't leave
to,
the house naked. This is weird.
Kanye
anyway.
On socials again.
Anyway, what was I saying before Kanye?
Doctor Who, David Tennant, Celia didn't like that season.
Yeah, because of that. And then I watched it and I messaged her. I was like, I actually kind of agreed because there was this kind of like her, like, he never notices me and blah, 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 that pining. And there was a few episodes where they don't deal with that at all, like the one, like the angels and stuff. Where the episodes, because even Seals made a good point where she was like, I feel bad for the actress because it wasn't the best companion, you know, like right. to be pining. But the episodes that they do where she's not doing that, they're fantastic and she's great. And then so after season one, she ends up staying on Earth because she's like, yeah, I don't want to be a companion because, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to pine over you.
Right.
And then ages later, once he gets to Catherine Tate, they see her again and she's engaged and stuff. But, no, it's really good.
Oh, well, she's moved on, so that's good.
Yeah. What are you watching?
I haven't watched anything this week except – I watched the first half of Aquaman, The Lost City,
the lost fucking audience of a film.
The Lost.
Got him. Got him.
Whatever. Aquaman 2. If DC or Marvel put something out, and I've just resigned myself to this fact now, I will watch it. Maybe not straight away.
Maybe not today.
But someday I will.
Maybe not tomorrow.
But someday. And I watched the first sort of 20, 25 minutes of this last night. I will go back and watch the rest of it. But oh boy, the first 20 minutes are insane. I completely forgot that Aquaman and his wife have a baby in the first film. And so like in the first 20 minutes of this, Aquaman finds out that like, his son also has fish talking powers. and so
Aquaman's just but boring, there's one
set I yeah, I mean they even talk about the intro is like, I'm Stephen Curry, also known as Aquaman, and like there's this battle scene where he's like beating up a bunch of pirates, like, you know, modern day pirates, and then he's explaining to the audience, like, Aquaman's so boring and the films did so poorly that the first 5 minutes is dedicated to like, remember me? I'm the cool Aquaman guy. All right, yeah.
It's just...
But then there's this scene to show, like, how happy he is. Like, it's like he's married and he's got a baby, changes the baby pees in his face and blah, blah. Oh, so cute.
Lol.
But then, like, he's hanging out with his dad, like, his dad and his baby, and there's this... Born, put it this way, in the opening montage to show Aquaman's life, they play Born to be Wild. The needle drop is Born to be Wild, right? Like, just the most lazy. It's like, get it? He's the cool superhero. He's like the cool.
Yeah, we don't have to pay for this song. It's been out long enough.
Yeah, exactly. Copyright. But also, like, this is the uncoolest fucking song. Like, it's the uncoolest needle drop. That song's like fucking 70 years old. It's like, and then there's a scene where like he's literally doing like fucking doughies on a Harley Davidson around his dad who's holding his son to show like, yeah, he's a dad, but he's still a wild man.
It sounds like, awful.
Because they had to give Aquaman like some sort of character trait, right? Like, and so they've gone with like, well, you know, we'll make him like a surfer dude kind of guy, and that's what Jason Momoa does, where he's kind of like, whoa, yeah, right. But it just like, I'm kind of excited to see how shit the rest of the film is. It's a film where I'll like, I will write a script or write more of my book while it's on, you know what I mean? Like, I will keep I'll work while it's on in the background. But I'm intrigued to see. It's got a Rotten Tomato score of 31%, and I really want to see how... Because so far I'm like, this is terribly shot. The CGI looks awful. I mean, people talked about the CGI looking bad in The Flash. This looks worse. And what I'm really intrigued to go and see, and I might even go and see it at the cinema really to punish myself, is Madame Web.
Yeah.
Do you know about Madame Web?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, man, the reviews for this film.
She's even saying, meh. The Dakota Johnson.
Whoa. I haven't seen it. It might be the film that kills superhero films. You know what I mean? Like, it might.
Sick of this shit.
I don't know at what point, like, they have to. See, it's interesting because this week the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer dropped and there's been a lot of heat for that. Like, people seem super excited about it. So that will keep Marvel ticking along because people will go see that film and it'll do really, really well. And so Marvel will go, yeah, we're making money. But it does feel like there is a... even just amongst my friends who were really into it when all these superhero films started, I can't get anyone to come watch these films with me anymore. So the critical response is terrible. People aren't going. It's costing these studios hundreds of millions of dollars to make these films. I just wonder what the breaking point is. But DC have just completely, like, they've got James Gunn on board to completely reboot their movie universe.
Well, that's good.
Well, yeah.
I feel like he does a lot of good stuff.
He does good, like Peacemaker. I haven't watched Peacemaker, but all my mates really loved it and it got good reviews and stuff. So, but anyway, yeah, first half of Aquaman is all I've done this week, unfortunately, guys. But I'll let you know how the second half is next week.
Okay, so.
Well, that's I've been reading a lot. I mean, if we can talk about books and stuff, I can...
The podcast is, should we just watch it real quick?
Yeah, I know. I'm reading Dune.
Good.
And surprise, surprise, really good book.
Let's talk about the movie we watched.
Do you want to talk about Last One Laughing first, or you want to talk about the Iron Claw first?
Oh, I just said we should talk about the movie first, but if you want to talk about the TV first, it's fine.
Okay, well, we'll talk about the Iron Claw first.
Okay, all right. Okay,
I'm intrigued. I watched this with you during the week. It was the second time I watched it. I watched it in the cinema and then we rented it this week.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people go, loved it, and a lot of people go, meh. And I don't know if the people going meh is because it's like they're such big wrestling fans that they're like, you know, they said that this happened when he was 24, but it really happened the day after his 25th birthday. So, you know, like that sycophantic fucking bullshit. And if that's the case, I don't know. But in terms of a film, it's a great film. Yeah. It's a really well-made film. It's a great film. The story is so sad. I thought it was really good. Yeah. I thought I was into it. I was so into it. I wonder, though, if I had seen it without you, because there was a few moments that things happened and I turned to you and went, did that really happen? Because I feel like maybe there wasn't enough explanation for certain things, and then I turned to you going, that really happened? And you're like, yeah, that really happened. And I feel like they kind of made this film with the assumption that people already knew the story. And I purposely didn't want to know the story before I watched it. Like stuff about, like, you know, the motorcycle accident and the first brother who passed away, like that kind of stuff. It was, I felt like they rushed over that. Well, I guess there's so many deaths that you just got to rush over a few of them, you know?
Yeah. But anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was predisposed to be into this film because I love professional wrestling, and it, much like The Wrestler, it was a filmmaker who was like, I'm going to make a proper film about pro wrestling. And I was like, you know, as soon as I saw The Iron Claw, as soon as I saw the trailer and it was called The Iron Claw, I'm like, okay, well, yeah, if you're going to make a story about any family in wrestling, the Von Erichs makes sense because it's sad. It's a sad story. And having watched it, it's really interesting. I enjoyed it even more the second time. But yeah, I was interested to see how you reacted to it because, you know, I am the absolute demographic for this film.
I thought it was really good. I thought, I mean, Zac Efron is like the new Brad Pitt of our time. I've said it before. I feel like he is so handsome that people probably don't understand that he's really good. You know what I mean? And it wasn't until Brad Pitt did like Once Upon a Time and stuff that people were like, oh, he's fucking great. Zac Efron's awesome in it. He's too buff. He's just he's it is unnecessary to be that buff. Yes, you're a wrestler. Yes, blah blah blah. But even the real guy in real life wasn't like that.
Dude, he
didn't have a neck. It's too much steroid use. Too much. I don't like it.
I don't like it.
But yeah, he was excellent in it. I feel like there's a lot of stuff for our little Gene Wilder lookalike. There's a lot of like, oh, this guy, and yes, he's like the best in the bear. I feel like he was fine in this one, but this film is really about Zac Efron's character.
Yeah, well, I mean, he plays David Von Erich, and it's David's story. Because as we always say on this podcast, I forgot to do the intro. Oh, well.
Oh, do it now.
This is Should We Just Watch It Real Quick? The only podcast that forgets to do its intro until about 30 minutes into the podcast and then stops mid-sentence to do it. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Damien Gibson. I didn't go to 7 years of the Bret Hart's dungeon to be called Mr. Thank you very much. And in the blue corner is the Raging Cajun. It's the woman who says, big whoop, want to fight about it, Kelly Verstuka.
That's me.
So as I was saying, yes, David Von Erich is the main character because it's his story, because as we always say on this podcast, all spoilers, no facts. Everybody else dies.
Yeah.
So the story can only really be told from David's point of view. But it does match up with, from what I know, and this is the other interesting thing as well. I'm not an expert in the Von Erich family. They were wrestlers in territories that were, this all sort of happened before I was old enough to start watching wrestling. It all sort of happened early 80s. I know that they exist and I know that they're a big family and stuff. A lot of people online around my age who are all instantly fucking Von Erich, you know, experts. It's like, oh, shut the fuck up, man. You've watched like, you know, a couple of WWE pay-per-views. But anyway, the film itself is beautifully shot. I think it's directed excellently. I think Zac Efron is the best actor in a cast where a lot of people are doing a lot of great work.
Yeah, everyone really is doing a great job. Yeah,
everyone's fantastic.
Everyone in this movie does an incredible job. And I think I was saying to you, I have a massive hard-on for Holt McClanally. Yeah, because he also plays the one of the policemen in, and when you tune your eye to him, he's in everything. Like, he's a real big character actor. Like,
yeah, working character actor.
Yeah, really, like in his 60s, but like in amazing. Oh, sorry, Jimmy is sleeping next to me, and he's snoring so loudly that it's so distracting.
You can't hear it.
I know, but it's so funny. Like, I just see it, and then I got this like little girl on the floor, like,
yeah, puppy alert. Jamie's still here, but she's gone up for adoption today online. Hopefully they do it. Yeah, hopefully we'll find her a new home soon.
But yeah, he's in Mindhunters, and he's like, you know, he's like got a little bit part in Batman, a little bit part here. Like, he's just constantly, and he's one of those people that, because I was really excited for him when I saw him in this role, because a lot of people were like, oh, he's going to get nominated for an Oscar. And he should have, for Best Supporting Role, I feel like, because this is like, not a lot of guys could have done, there's an intensity for this father character, whereas a lot of people would have acted it of him like yelling.
Yeah,
and being like over the top, but he has a really cool, like, he delivers some really like cool lines in terms of, when I say cool, like no love,
cold,
yeah, really cold, and yeah, awful, yeah, disconnecting. I think he's really good. I think he deserves more as an actor. I think he's really good.
The story of this. So, like, if you're not into pro wrestling, it doesn't matter. It's an interesting story, and it's a really well-made film. A24, who are the production company behind this, are making probably the most interesting films in America at the moment, and this is one of them. The quality, I would say the quality of the craft of this film is so good that I didn't pick up on a lot of it the first time I watched it. I'm so glad I watched it again this week. The acting is fantastic. It's cast well. You know, I've seen some criticisms of like the actors are more erudite than the wrestlers were in real life. And like, well, of course they are. It's a film. You know, you can't have the actors portraying the wrestlers as a bit monosyllabic and stuff. Like, they need to be able to compel people to watch the screen. what I find really interesting, so just if you don't know the story, it's about four brothers who were wrestlers and three of them die in tragic circumstances. And it's kind of a redemption story of David, the eldest, for want of a better story, coming to terms with what it means to be a man and moving on and away from the toxicity of his like obsessed father, who's obsessed with success and all this kind of stuff. What I found really interesting from like a filmmaker standpoint is how sort of tactfully they deal with the deaths of the brothers. You don't see two of the brothers kill themselves. You don't see them die, even when Jeremy Allen White, who plays Kerry Von Erich, who's probably the most famous of the Von Erich brothers, he ended up in WWF as the Texas Tornado. He had a really bad motorbike accident in real life where he loses his foot. You don't see that. What they do, I love this actually. You see him speeding down a highway at like 100 miles an hour, and it's very old filmic techniques of they essentially, you can just see like, it feels like a 1950s film, like a Marlon Brando or James Dean film, like a rebel on his motorbike, you know, and you just see all black and then the light on the highway and just the lines speeding past him, and then it goes black. You see him wake up in bed, he's on crutches, so it's like, oh, okay, well, he's had an accident. And then there's this mid shot of the kitchen, and Jeremy Allen White walks into the kitchen, and he's had one of his feet amputated. And like the shock comes from not expecting to see that foot.
And that's
gone,
when I
right?
turned to you and went, did that really happen? And you're like, yeah. And I get why they did it, because it's a good shock, but I guess. Yeah, if I didn't have you there, I would have been like, what? This
but the is more crazy. Obvious thing would be like smash cut to him like being on a gurney, being pushed into an emergency room with like Zaka from by side and being like, you're going to be okay, little brother. And then a doctor coming in like, we're going to have to take your foot, and everybody cries.
I think that would be boring and shit. Correct. Like, they could have done it with a small thing like him going, like it could have been just him riding and then maybe hear like a screech and then a ka-clunk and that's it. And then cut to him getting up. Or it could have just been one small like shot of him in the hospital, like opening up his eyes and seeing no foot and then closing his eyes again and then the next.
I
didn't know what was happening.
But they tell you after the fact. So if you've missed, if you haven't, just let me finish, Bob. Come on. If you haven't joined the dots between that scene, like the motorbike scene and the fact that he's lost his foot, they say it later on in the film. You've just got to be a bit patient. You know, they don't spoon feed everything to you. And that's, as an audience member, I appreciate it when the filmmaker, gives me the benefit of the doubt that I'm going to be able to pick this up. I think I get bored of most of the things that we watch for this podcast because it's so fucking spoon-fed and I'm just sitting. I feel like when I used to wait for people in class when we would all read from the same book, you know, and I would read my passage and then I'd go to the next person, they'd be like, cat, sir. That's what it feels like to watch most TV and films these days. It's just like, fuck, I know, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I just kind of feel like when it's like, oh, be patient and they'll tell you later, I'm stuck in that moment. So I'm watching the film going, what happened? Is that, oh, they need to explain, what? And then I'm not focusing, I'm missing other things because it's like I'm stuck on that moment. It's just
he was on his bike and then he woke up on crutches and doesn't have a foot anymore. So wouldn't it be obvious to
draw the conclusion
that something happened on his motorbike, like, where he's lost his foot?
Like he just cut his foot off, like they didn't try and save it. I don't know, like it feels I needed just a little bit more in that scene. Soz.
Yeah, but the way that they deal with Mike, the youngest brother's suicide, even Kerry's suicide, like you don't see, I mean, you hear Carrie's, you don't see Mike's at all. That's another shot in the film that I love where they find Mike, the youngest brother's suicide note, and then you see like five or six guys like out in the fields of the Von Erich farm looking, and they just keep this wide shot, and the mics are set up like, it feels like the mic setup is from the mic on the camera like 100 yards away because you can just hear off in the distance as if you were at the farmstead watching this happen. You hear someone go, "Mike, oh no, Mike," and then they all run towards obviously where a body is, and then that's it again. Like, you don't you don't see him, you don't. And I feel like there's probably an element of like, because there were a couple of wrestlers who are executive producers of this film, MJF, who's a big wrestler in AEW, is one of them. So wrestlers respect other wrestlers, so there probably is an element of like, let's not be brutal with the death scenes here. These are real people, you know, and there's family members alive that will be watching this, so let's try and be a little bit respectful. But I think in doing that, they've actually made a better film because of it, because there is this real gentle, almost kind of ethereal spookiness to the film where it's foreboding through what you don't see. Like, it could have been really brutal, right? Like, there's people dying in this film all the time, and it could, they could have really gone for shock value and shown you those scenes. But I really appreciate it as an audience member that, again, I don't need to see that, because the emotional weight is left to the actors to show you, you know, like in the aftermath. And I agree with you that Zac Efron is legitimately brilliant in this film.
I love him. Like, outside of the, really rate him.
Outside of the body transformations that all of these young guys have done, obviously, Efron, like, I remember when watching it at the cinema, I got halfway through the film and was like, Zac Efron is completely carrying this, like, really touching indie film about pro wrestling. And I never really clocked him as that. You know, I saw him as like a teen heartthrob who had like gone off to do sort of shitty comedies most of his career, but he's got some acting chops. And I thought Jeremy Allen White was really great in this. He's not a huge player in the film, but I think I have an opinion that he'll end up being a movie star. He just has like elements of Hoffman and Pacino. He just reminds me of that kind of, like, a young version of those guys. And that intensity comes through in this film as well. So, I fucking love this movie.
Because it just explained to me, with the brothers, the eldest brother, Jack, died when he was, like, 7 years old.
Yeah.
And then there was Kevin, who is Zac Efron.
Right.
And then who's next?
David.
Who is the guy that dies first?
The blonde guy, dies in Japan because he had like a bowel obstruction but wouldn't go to the doctor because he'd just been made NWA champion.
And then Kerry's next.
Or was about to be. Kerry's next.
And then
Michael, or Mike, is the youngest.
And then he's the one who shot himself as well. Or no, took the pills.
He took the pills. And, yeah.
And then who's Chris? Because I'm looking here on... Unless it's, yeah, so Chris is...
Isn't Chris the eldest one that died when he was...
No, that's Jack. His ring name is Chris, and then...
Is Chris Von Erich... I know there's a cousin. There was a cousin that got into wrestling as well, Chris Von Erich, maybe?
Smallest and youngest of the Von Erich family, Chris aspired to be a wrestler. He was the youngest son. His brothers Mike, David, Kerry, Kevin... Mike, David.
So Michael, David, Kerry, and Kevin are the four brothers that are in this film. Maybe he didn't want to be in the movie.
Because he also, he grew up with his brothers, but he was small. He was only 5'5". Had lots of health problems, asthma. He tried to do wrestling, but he would break bones easy. After the 1987 suicide of his brother Mike, who took the drug overdose, Chris began to experience depression and drug issues. He was also frustrated by his inability to make headway as a wrestler due to his physical build. And then in 1991, Chris was found by his brother Kevin and mother outside his family farm in Edom, suffering a self-inflicted gunshot wound. According to Kevin, Chris came into him in the middle of the night wanting back a VCR, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So that's what I don't understand. So they didn't talk about him at all. Because when you look at photos, there's the four big boys and there's a smaller boy. So he's obviously a lot younger.
Hmm.
But they didn't talk about him at all. Like, they just didn't have time.
I don't know.
Kevin had four brothers, David, Kerry, Mike, and Chris. Unless Chris is an amalgamation of what's the one? The one – well, Mike was the musician, yeah?
Hmm.
I'm confused.
I don't know. Maybe I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know why they would have left him out, but I don't know.
Anyway, la, la, la. Yeah, it's confusing. Anyway, I'm going to do grumps. I think I'm going to give it four grumps because I thought it was really great. I probably would have given it higher for just a few little nitpicky things, but I thought it was really good. And I feel like the people, if you're someone who like wants to be a sycophant and be like, actually, which is what I'm doing now, going, who's Chris? Actually, don't just, it still really tells us what's up, which is it's a real sad story. The dad really pushed them. It's a real, you know, that toxic masculinity of being a father that's just trying to, obviously trying to like his dreams through his kids, which is fucked.
Hmm. The Henry film, Grumps. Just before I get to that, the film is about the Von Erich family, but really what the director is talking about in this film is maleness and what it means to be a man in 2024. And through Kevin Von Erich, we get to a point of like, well, being a man is someone who's there for his family, can emote, has relationships with his kids, cares about his friends and family, not what his dad is like, which is like he literally has a fucking ranking system for his sons, you know? And also just like from a wrestling nerd point of view, I know most people won't care about this, but I just want to get it on the record. I think they do an amazing job of all the in-ring stuff. The guys would have actually gone to wrestling school to learn how to wrestle. They're mainly doing like arm drags and off the rope body drops and stuff like that, which is the first sort of things you learn in wrestling school, but I can't fucking do it. And these guys went and did it. So like kudos to them for actually learning how to grap in the ring, you know? And I thought the real life characters that we see, like Harley Race, Ric Flair, I've seen some backlash towards that as well. If you think that this film is portraying those guys unfairly, then you probably need to go and read some old timers' biographies. And I think you'll realize pretty quickly that these were pretty spot on portrayals of who these people were in real life. I'm going to give it five. I would have, I actually, if we had done it just on the first watching, I would have given it four as well.
But the second one,
but after watching it the second time, it's made me cry both times I've watched it at the end, like when his sons are like, we'll be your brother's daddy. It's like, oh my God. And it's a film that like, I mean, just anything that has wrestling in it, and takes it somewhat seriously and shows its sort of like place in American life. You know, it's a big deal for a lot of people. And you see that through this film as well. But and also the message of like, you know, this, you don't have to, this old idea of what it is to be a man is archaic and dumb and ridiculous, and let's move on from it. So I think it's a beautifully made film with an important message that also has pro wrestling in it, which I love. So, yeah, five stars. Five grumps. Why do I keep saying fucking stars?
Because you're a dickhead.
Fair.
Cruel and fair. So, second thing that we watched was LOL, Last One Laughing, Ireland.
Ireland.
Well, now, the Last One Laughing series, I watched the Australian one.
I haven't watched the Australian one.
Oh, and we watched the Canadian. We love the Canadian one.
Some of the most fun TV we've ever watched together.
Yeah, Colin Mochrie, Tom Green.
Should we just tell the people what it is real quick? It's a reality comedy show where essentially 10 comedians are put in a room and no one can laugh. If you laugh or smile, you get eliminated from, it's like a Big Brother house sort of thing, but filled with comedians.
Yeah.
And so they're all competing to make each other laugh, to knock each other out of the competition. Good premise, fun premise. Sorry, Cal.
So the Canadian one was great because you just like, you just look at Colin Mockery's stupid face.
Mockery and Tom Green.
Tom Green just walking up to someone going, would you like to eat a sandwich?
I'm making a sandwich.
Sandwich.
Would you like a sandwich?
It's so funny. And then who's your Foley?
Dave Foley.
Dave Foley's in it. Like really, really good. So, and the Australian one I really like too.
Who's my Edo, guy?
Edo's really funny in it. You know, like, anyway. So, give this one a whirl. Was there an American one? I can't remember.
I don't think an American one has been made.
Is there an English one?
No. There's Brazil. I keep looking to see if there's Brazil, Germany, Portugal, Turkey.
It's so funny watching other countries and their representation of like people that go in.
Mm.
Like in the Australian one, Frank Woodley was in.
Right.
Straight away. It's like, I'm out. Because he just looks at you like going, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you're like, fuck off. And it's funny, like looking at the island one, like the only person I know is Jason Byrne because he comes out for festival and Graham Norton is hosting and I wish he was in there because I love Graham Norton. But it's so funny
he's
just
good
watching.
As a host. He's, yeah. He's good as a host.
But it's just funny watching all the like the Irish like comedians.
I was amazed that you didn't know Aisling Bea.
Who?
I keep saying this to you while we're watching
Oh, that's her name, Aisling Bea.
Yeah.
No. Nah. I'm looking at her right now. So you think you're funny, 8 out of 10 cats. Maybe I've seen her on that show, but she obviously is not in my brain enough to like, she wasn't memorable enough because it's people that you remember because they're really, really funny.
Yeah.
There's a subtlety.
I would say she's the most famous person in that cast.
Okay. Well, all of the people, I feel like it's weird because the subtlety of Irish comedians in this is annoying because they're all of them act the same. They're all like, oh, yeah, I suppose so, yeah, oh, yeah. And it's like there's no – and I know because the whole thing is supposed to be about, you know, trying to make people laugh. And I'm not really laughing a lot because no one's making me laugh. I know this is so judgy, but I just cannot move past it. And maybe this has a part to do with it. It's because people that are funny kind of can look funny, like Woodley and Mockery. The women at the moment, all five of them have had so much plastic surgery, there is not a forehead between them. Not an eyebrow raise, not a funny face, not a hoo-hoo, not a hee-hee, not a ha-ha. And it is annoying and I really feel like that affects the show because there's no expression on someone's face when they're telling a story or, you know, it's just boring. They're all so goddamn gorgeous and beautiful, all these women, but clearly, like, not a forehead moves. And it's really sad.
I think, to be fair, you're getting a little hung up on the foreheads. I think
it's just annoying.
I don't think it's as funny so far. We've only watched a couple of episodes. I don't think it's as funny as the Canadian one. What I'm kind of more interested to talk about is – this seems to be how comedians now get, discovered by audiences. Shows like Taskmaster, Last One Laughing. Mm. I don't know whether that's good or not because these guys aren't – I mean, the vast majority of them are stand-ups, right? So, like, this isn't probably a fair representation of whether they're funny or not. Right? Would you agree with that? Because like you,
I don't know, man. When I watched the other episodes of this, not Ireland, but like Australia and Canada, straight away, funny people make me laugh. Straight away, you're like, oh, I've only watched a few episodes. No, episode one, go, make me laugh.
The guy with the long hair, whatever his name is.
Yeah, he did like a puppet thing.
He's made me laugh a few times.
But one guy...
Aisling Bea did a song that was kind of funny.
Kind of funny. Funny. Last One Laughing. There was one comedian who put cereal in his pocket of his jeans and then was like...
Baked beans.
Huh?
He put baked beans in his pocket.
I thought he put cereal in there and then put milk in there.
I did cereal. Originally, and then he put baked beans in the other pocket.
Okay, so I'll go back to the first bit. So he was putting cereal in his pocket, and then he was trying to get attention off people by going, I'm making cereal in my pocket. I'm making cereal. Look, and like people are like, oh, yeah. And then put milk in there. I'm like, is this what you think's funny, to put milk in your pants? Like, do a joke. Be a Anne Edmonds, when she did it, she started doing a character. She just started sitting there doing a character. What was the name? Like Arnie, fucking Arnie something. Like Arnie Tracy. And she's like, nah, don't worry about me. I'll just fucking die here. No, your mum never calls me. And I was howling. See, you're laughing. I'm just telling you the story. Anne Edmonds was so
funny. I'm a pretty good audience when it comes to comedians.
She was, dude. But and the thing is, if I'm in that room, I'm out because... And she's not laughing. She's just doing a... This is comedy.
Here is what I think the problem is with the Irish.
They're too pretty.
Listen to me. I think they all want to win. So they're more worried about not laughing at other people's shit rather than trying to make people laugh.
Yeah.
In the Canadian one, the only person who seemed to care about not laughing was Mae Martin, and she was the first one to go. But we did have some similar complaints about the Canadian one at first. It's like, who's this person? They're not funny. To be fair, that show, this format, is completely made for Tom Green. Mm. Like, Tom Green is the king. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you've just got to do the most outrageous shit you can.
Yeah.
To make people laugh.
Yeah, and it's...
I'm enjoying it. It's light and fluffy. The episodes go for 25 minutes. Like... They're still reasonably entertained. They're not offensive people. I think there will be more laughs along the way.
Like, no one's trying to make people laugh. Like that Deirdre chick, right? She's supposed to be like a, you know, like a kind of a Fiona O'Loughlin. Like, you know, she's got kids. She's been around. She's 55. Doesn't look 55. So much Botox. She's not done a joke yet.
She hasn't said anything.
She hasn't said anything. She hasn't had a joke yet. And it's just frustrating because I'm like, you guys are supposed to be funny. Yes, they're probably too obsessed with, you know, trying to win. Anyway, I'm not a fan. 1.5 grumps, man. That's just shit. No one's funny. I think you're
being really harsh.
No one's funny.
You're a very, very harsh judge when it comes to comedy, though.
I love Irish comedians. Do a character. Like when the chick got up and sang a song and she goes, oh, I'm going to sing a song. And she was like trying to be... You know, she's being really, really heartfelt, which is funny. But I was like, that was in the second episode.
That was funny because, she set it up to us of like, Irish people, a lot like Australians, can't handle sentimentality or authenticity. So I'm going to sing a song and I'm going to sing it properly and it's a heartbreaker. And so she got up and sang this song.
1.5 grumps, bro. It's not good.
I think you're being real harsh. Yeah, I think like...
Good that she worked on
it. I'll give it... I'm not enjoying it anywhere near as much as I did the Canadian one. I would give the Canadian one 5 stars.
The Canadian
one
was so good. I'm
giving this 2.5 grumps.
Be more funny. Anyway.
But what I would say is I like the format and I would like to see more of it Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
This must be the cheapest fucking show you make.
It takes a day. They do 6 hours in there. Right? It takes a
it's
day.
It's a day shooting. You've got to pay the comedians and then that's it.
Mm.
Do another Canadian one. Mm. You know what I mean? Like get other Kids in the Hall guys in there. Like Graham and Dave from Stop Podcast yourself. There's plenty of fucking John Dore. There are very funny Canadian guys. An American one. An English one.
I feel like...
Maybe they worry about going up against things like Taskmaster and stuff, but like, fuck, man. If that was on... If there were like 20 seasons of that on Amazon Prime, I would watch nothing else. I would just have it on the background, you know, watching funny people be funny, you know? Like, we need more of that. Please, comedy is cheap to make. Please make more of it. We don't need more adaptations of Jack Reacher or Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Or
I like Jack Reacher.
But I'm just saying, like, you know, you've got, like, Amazon Prime literally has 15 of those shows of, like, action shows that cost hundreds of millions of dollars to make. Make a fucking day-long shoot comedy, you know?
Just trying to see if there was an American one and who was in it. But it's, as always, it's like just an enormous... Oh, no, there was an American one because it was It was hosted by the guy who is in some of the Judd Apatow films. Or was that?
No, that's the Canadian one.
He hosted that.
Jay Burchanel or whatever.
Yeah.
He hosted the Canadian one.
Was it?
Yeah. Remember?
Okay. Yeah, right. Okay. I'm just trying to see. Why would you not do an American one?
Okay. Let's not have a podcast where we're just reading Wikipedia.
It's so dumb.
We're not Will Anderson.
Anyway.
Don't
understand the reference, but I respect
that's
it.
That's all he does on his podcast. So we thank you for listening. Listening figures go up. Ratings go up. You guys keep telling your friends. We love you very much. Keep doing that.
Yay.
Keep doing that. I was just trying a different. I was just trying that line in with a different read. Keep doing that.
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 Thanks, guys. We appreciate it. Share. Tell your friends. If anyone wants to adopt a dog, contact me.
We're also going to – we had a conversation yesterday. We're also going to really start to try on social media as well. We're both shit at it, so we will start trying to do
– I mean, we can do video if you want, but we're just two schleps sitting in our living room.
People don't want that.
I don't know. I feel like that's how people get traction, doing video.
Yeah. Yes. We should probably do it, but I don't know if the audience really wants that
it's
much.
It's just anyway, me moving my head away from the mic trying to burp in the ether.
Do you know how hard it is for us to do this? Anyway –
trying to burp, the burp's not coming out. All right. I love you.
I love you too.